Hi everyone, it's Kesonga. Just a reminder that you can listen to all of our podcasts ad-free on the Headspace app. Headspace
Sean.
What's happening?
The only person to use a camera in.
Oh, I turned it off. Oh my god. Okay, watch
no,
it.
Leave it on. I like that you also have a fully professional podcast.
I know, right? Well, it's you and I want to be prepared and I wanna I wanna look good.
I mean, where did you even come across a podcast microphone in these days?
You're not just driving around and look at people's garbage.
Yeah.
Wait, Catherine, tell me everything about this experience, about starting this podcast, and are you having fun?
Having so much fun. It's actually really nice to do it. To do it from home, obviously, is very convenient and nice. Everybody's available. Everybody's home. Nice. So there's not like a ton of people, you know, saying they can't do certain things, which is nice.
But the people who say no, you're like, really? Really?
Yeah, totally.
I'm so proud of you, honey. You've come so far and you're doing so well. And
oh, thank you.
I love you and I'm so proud of you. I think it's so great to
That's
get a sideline and watch you keep growing. By the way, we're rolling, right? We're getting all this is gold.
We are, in fact, rolling. Welcome to the show. I'm Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. From Headspace Studios, this is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this series, we're talking to people about the topic of forgiveness and moments in their lives where they've struggled to forgive. You might be wondering why I'm hosting a show about forgiveness. It's a topic that seems so simple. Life brings challenges, and with it, hurt, anger, and betrayal. I found myself saying that I had forgiven someone when I didn't really mean it. I hadn't actually moved on. So then I started thinking, why was this so hard? Why couldn't I just let it go and forgive? So I started talking to everyone I could. Friends, family, experts, religious leaders, and strangers who had incredible forgiveness stories of their own. I heard stories of people who were able to forgive what seemed to me to be the most unforgivable things. Those stories then led me to my book, The Gift of Forgiveness. Like exercise or meditation, forgiveness is a practice, and over time you have the ability to get better at it. It's not necessarily something you do once and suddenly master forever. For many of us, it's a muscle that needs to be exercised. Today's episode is super fun because I got the chance to interview my longtime friend, Sean Hayes. He's an actor and comedian, best known for his role as Jack on Will and Grace. He's also an author, podcaster himself, producer, singer, husband, and just an overall wonderful human being. I sat down with Sean to discuss his forgiveness journeys, both with himself and others.
We were actually talking before you came on, we were talking about when I met you, because it was so long ago that I can't even remember the year or when.
Yeah, I think it was like 2001 or two.
Yeah, so I was like 10.
That you're like 10. That's so crazy. That's so crazy.
It's so wild. I know. It's crazy how
you are going to have so many freaking babies soon. It's kind of funny, right?
I know. A small village. Bring them all, a herd, to Maria's house. We'll come there for Sunday dinner.
Yeah, totally. Oh my God. That's the best time ever. One of the things I always thought was so fascinating, I would go over there. There would be little like notes that your mom put on, like turn the lights off if you leave a room or something like that. And then also if you get a pair of shoes, you have to give one away.
Yeah.
Which I thought,
exactly.
I love that. That's so cool and smart.
I know it is. It's funny because we, as we got older and those notes of turning your lights off before you leave your room no longer worked, my dad started taking it to another level. And if you left your room without turning off your light, he would unscrew a light bulb for every single time. Yeah. Remember there was a point where Christopher, who's my youngest brother, Christopher was left in a completely dark room and he was like 4.
Yeah.
My mom's like, Arnold, he's 4 years old. It's his story time. He can't read now. It's,
or he's like,
yeah, he's going to learn. That's how he's going to learn. Yeah, yeah, I know. It's so funny to be able to like reflect on all of those times. I love it. Okay, so we'll get right into it. So I would love to just like hear a little bit about when forgiveness has even come up for you.
Yeah, so for me, it's so great to have this conversation with you because I haven't really addressed it or really talked about it. And I have no problem talking about it. It's like one of those things, it's like, oh yeah, you think, you know, being in the public eye and actually reaching a certain age, you're like, what do I care? Like, anybody can ask me anything they want. I'm an open book because like, we all have 5 minutes on this earth and it goes like that, you know, it's gone in a second. So why are we holding on to so many things that we deem our precious territory as, you know, public people, when if it can help somebody, reveal it, like talk about it. And so thank you for this format. I think it's great. So I think that my story is, you know, I think I knew I was gay when I was like 5 or 6 years old. Maybe, I don't know, whenever you start thinking about those types of things. And maybe that's too young, but I do remember my sister dressing me up in her dress, wearing a dress, dragging me over to her friend's house across the street. And she said, you have to sit here on the curb and wait for me. So I sit there on the curb while cars drive by in a dress at 4 years old.
I love that. What a good older sister.
Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. I mean, she probably laughed all the way home, but I think, you know, so my dad was an alcoholic and probably still is. I don't know. He's still alive. And he, you know, it was very tumultuous growing up. He was there and then he wasn't there. And then I think he left when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And I remember like, you know, this one, you know, things like that, you'll never forget. They're burned into your brain, your memory, like when he left. And I remember he had his suitcases and my mom said, I know I'm jumping around. I'm like, I thought it was going to be about me being gay.
But, no, this is great.
So I remember when he had his suitcases there and my mom, and he was about to leave. And my mom said, you're not even going to say goodbye to your kids. And he put his suitcases down, walked over me and barely hugged me. Like it was like he was fulfilling a duty that he had to do, like it was a chore. And then he took off and I was like, obviously that affected me, but and then from, you know, once you start having a conscience and you start becoming self-aware when you're, I don't know, 10, 15 years old, 20 years old, whenever that happens, you start going, oh yeah, oh yeah. And then you start putting these things, and this is why I act the way I do, because I have abandonment issues, I have trust issues, I have all those things, and needy issues, and it's all those things add up to wanting to be an actor, probably. Because you get a lot of those things, right? You get the applause, you get the adulation, you get the love, you get the, oh my God. You know, so I'm sure that had a little bit of to do with it, but I always thought that I was fine with it, but I think I turned it into, over time, waking up every day with the kind of adage of, I'll show you, right? And that was my drive. That was my ambition. That was my revenge. Is like, you know, you've heard success is the best revenge. And so it's still kind of why I work really hard. It's kind of like that I'll show you thing, right? You know, he still reaches out, and I don't know if I'll ever listen to this, but he reaches out and says happy birthday to me every year through an email, and or he'll send me a card for Christmas, and it just feels empty, and I still feel the anger. And just like even 2 years ago, I mean, I think he's in his 80s now. 2 years ago, he asked me for a favor if I could sign and if I could autograph a picture for somebody that he works with that was a fan. And it just like you know, it blew open this whole thing inside of me. It was like, and I wrote back, excuse me, a quote, favor? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're asking me for a favor? Like that, it didn't compute.
Right. But
I don't know, I was so furious. And finally, after all these years, I kind of just let it out. And this is only 2 years ago. I let it out and I was just like, look, you know, I have a little bit of a problem and it's nothing to do with your friend who's a fan and please tell her thank you. But if I'm doing this for you, you have to realize what you have not done for me and all of us. And it's affected all of us. But I think it's healing to talk to you about it. And I'm open to any insight about how to reach a point to where I can forgive him, because I don't think I have yet. And I kind of feel like I want to, but you make such great points at the beginning when you're like, it's so true. I never really thought about it until we started emailing and talking about it today. Is what does that mean for me if I forgive him? Then it's almost like apologizing for a fight with your spouse when you know you're not wrong, mm-hmm. you know, just to get through it. Mm-hmm. Or so then I lose if I apologize and I'm not going to get it from him. Still haven't gotten it. Still haven't gotten that, oh my God, I screwed up so badly. I abandoned 5 children. I left your mother with 5 kids to raise. We had no heat in the winter in Chicago. That will change your life forever. That will make you get out of bed and work your balls off. You know what I mean? I never want to be cold again, you know? I never want to relive that. And so you put us through hell. My mom couldn't pay the bills on 1 salary and she could barely feed us sometimes. So he put us through all of these things. So it's really hard to say, you know what, don't worry about it.
And I've talked to a lot of people who say that they've gotten that from a parent at some point in their lives. And then I've talked to a lot of people who have never gotten that and know they will never get it.
Right.
And I think
how do you come to grips with that?
Yeah. How do you say that it's okay if you never hear from the person's mouth that they're sorry? It would be nice to, of course. And it would be nice if, you know, parent, sibling, friend, ex, whatever it is, it would be great for people to be held accountable for their behavior, but that doesn't happen. And so how do we not allow another person's inability to apologize for their wrongdoings or their pain that they've caused you?
Yeah.
So it's for me, it was really making the distinction and saying, you might never hear an apology from a person ever. And if you do, that's an additional gift that you will get as icing on the cake.
So you somehow have peace with that, right?
Yeah. But if you look at forgiveness and how I've switched from looking at it, because I also, you know, went through phases where I was like, I'm not going to forgive somebody for doing something bad to me. That's me giving them something. But looking at forgiveness as something that is saying, okay, what you did is so wrong that I so don't want it to be a part of my life and my future moving forward. And I want to take control of my future and my life. And I want to use bolt cutters to free myself from you. And free myself from this incident, this pain that you've caused me, this hurt that you've caused me, because I don't want to bring it with me in my future moving forward.
And also knowing maybe that they are incapable apologizing or incapable of just all of it, of being aware of apologizing, of knowing they did. You know, a friend of mine told me that I was having this issue with this one person, and a second friend was like, you know what, Sean, he's doing the best that he can. Mm-hmm. And I love that phrase because people do the best that they can. And then it's up to you to either accept that or not accept, you know, and if you don't accept it, then you have to move on from that person, right? Emotionally. Then I think it's probably time to, like you're saying, to realize all of that and in order to move forward, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't hang on to it. I don't know, it's all fascinating.
Yeah, it's also fascinating how so many people, I think this is true with a parent or, you know, a lot of the people that I interviewed for my book talked a huge amount about a person who caused them pain and having immediate or at some point having compassion and empathy for their pain and their situation that caused them to behave a certain way that in turn caused them pain. So, you know, that they're doing the best that they can.
And then you realize, you go, you know, you've heard so many people say this, and I agree with, I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change a thing about the way any of it went down, because I wouldn't be here, right?
Right.
And so so maybe I should thank my father in a certain way, you know, like it really made me a stronger individual.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com.
When I came out to my mom and my family, I was 18 years old. And I remember my mom had a real tough time with it. She would send me, it's funny now, but she would send me Xeroxed photos of articles in encyclopedias about being gay. I was like, because we used to have this, you know, it's before the internet. So she would pull out an encyclopedia and like Xerox, like a thing about homosexuality. And I was like, Mom, seriously? But I remember telling my mom, she used to send me Bible verses, and, you know, she was just misinformed, and forgive me, she's passed away, but forgive me, Mom, uneducated about all of it. Mm-hmm. And, but in that moment, I remember that weekend I told her, and it was really, really rough. I was sitting on the couch and she wrote me this like 11 page letter, both sides, legal size paper. It was like a book about how wrong it is. I'm going to hell and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'll see you there. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all. And I said to her, I turned around, I go, you know what? Now I don't have any parents. It was the feeling of fight or flight, right? So now I feel, not only am I abandoned from my dad, now I feel abandoned from my mom. And all I have are my friends. Sure, I had my family, but I just didn't really truly know how they felt about it. And they were very supportive at the beginning. They were like, you know, my oldest brother's like, what do I care, you know? And other people were fine with it. And, but I didn't know. And as a gay person in the world, you never truly know if people are just saying they're okay or if they really truly are okay. And it's the DNA you're left with from being gay and being in a society growing up in the 80s when you're told that it's wrong and, you know, you are going to hell and all those horrible things. And then you realize, oh, it's just, people are just uneducated.
To have that reaction, I think there are so many people who will be listening to this podcast and also just who know your story in general, who can totally relate to having that reaction of, you know, at whatever phase in their life, for you, it was 18, feeling, you know, okay, I'm going to come out to my family, to my friends for the first time, and not knowing what the reaction will be like from a parent, and for you having one parent present and having that, you know, your mom react that way, I'm sure was incredibly painful. And
she was a product of society. She was a product of what she was taught and she learned. And that's why we have to, it's so important. Everybody thinks the work, oh, we've accomplished so much. Gay marriage is legal now and we're recognized as U.S. citizens. When it's like, no, there are still people getting gay bashed and, you know, abused and abandoned by their families. And I'm like, and to me and you and people who are educated, it's mind blowing. It's like, what is the issue? How is, you know, the people who fought against gay marriage is like, how is your life different before gay marriage was legal and after gay marriage? It's not different. Your life has not changed at all. It is not impacted at all. We are just recognized as equal. We're not even yet. We still have a long way to go because of transgender rights and all those things. It's like,
so how long after your mom had that reaction when you came out, did you allow her to be present back in your life again?
That's a good question. It was, remember, that was my, during my first year of college, and I was because I was then angry at my mom for not understanding and accepting me, I was a little rebellious. And so I would probably come home to visit on the weekends from college, a little, you know, angry, aloof, you know. And ultimately, I think because she is such an incredible mother and such a strong woman, she started to come around slowly. Like maybe when I was like, maybe a couple of years after I came out, and she told me about, you know, certain things she saw. She saw a certain movie, or, you know, she had another friend who had a gay son, and, you know, she did her work, and she sought out enlightenment. And then she became more aware and more open. And then, you know, by the time you knew it, I was her favorite, and she would go out and, you know, would have dinner with me and whoever I was dating at the time. But she was fantastic. She was the best mom in the whole world. But I remember one instant where, of all houses, so when I became successful enough, I bought the house that we lived in, which was falling apart at the seams. I bought the house to the left of it, and I bought the house to the right of it. And I tore all three down, and I built her this huge house as like a thank you. Oh my God, Look, you gave up your life for us kids. And it was a place for all of us to congregate. Of course, that's another story that, you know, no good deed goes unpunished because it broke up the family. But anyway, but it was this great thing. And then of all people to move into the new house next to my mom's new house was a gay couple. Like they could have picked Amazing. Any house in this whole town I grew up where there are basically no gay people. Mm-hmm. And these two gay guys who were married moved in next to my mom. And I was just like, what are the odds? And so I was walking out with my now husband, Scotty. Scotty and I were walking in the driveway, and there's these bushes that block both driveways, my mom's driveway and the gay couple's driveway. And one of them said, "Hi, Mrs. Hayes," and they couldn't really see me. And my mom said super loud, she goes to me, she goes, "See, honey, he's got a friend like you got a friend." Like, Mom, it's okay. You say like husband and boyfriend. And it's a, well, I just know you guys are, you know, you guys are friends too. So she, just a sign of the times, you know what I mean? For that specific issue, for being gay, I had to go to the place in my head where, in order to forgive her, I have to blame society, and I have to blame history, and I have to blame the world we lived in. It's not, I didn't necessarily think it was her fault. So that was an easier forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And then she asked, and then I asked her for forgiveness for being so removed and not guiding her to any resources that she could have listened to. Or, you know, I didn't push either. I'm like, I'm gay, deal with it, you know, because I had my defenses up because I was ready for the fight. So I thought I was ahead of the game by having that attitude. It was just like, I'm gay and I'm not ready, and it's not my problem. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And, but of course it was, and for so many years, and still is, like Scotty and I still, you know, freak out at a stoplight. If we're in our car at a stoplight and there's somebody next to us who can possibly see in, and we're just like holding hands, it's built into me to release his hand, to take care of other people's feelings about gay people. Mm-hmm. And I keep fighting that, and I keep challenging myself to make it other people's problem. It's an ongoing struggle.
Do you feel like that's a self-forgiveness struggle?
Yes, 1,000%. Yes. It's about saying the things that you're afraid of and doing the things you're afraid of in order to grow and in order to forgive yourself. So I remember it was David Letterman's like last 2 or 3 months of his talk show. And I was flattered he wanted me on, and I had just gotten married to Scotty. David said, "You know, what have you been up to?" And I said, "Well, I just got married to a man," not to be confused with a woman. And some of the audience laughed, and some were like, so I knew to just keep going. You know, I'm going to lose people. So it's my own little challenge to myself every day to embrace those words and embrace my own fear.
Yeah, I mean, I think self-forgiveness, and I've learned talking to people that self-forgiveness is the most challenging form of forgiveness to experience, and it's the work of a lifetime for most people, and it is an ongoing process because of how complex it is and how challenging it can be. And to me, especially growing up and knowing you for most of my life, that was never even like, that was never a thing for me, but I would imagine.
That's good parenting. Truly.
Yeah.
That's good parenting.
You know, like when Ellen DeGeneres started her show, she had come out. And was there any sort of like reaction from other people that required you to have a forgiveness journey or a moment with them?
Such a good question. Yeah. I know it's really weird for people to hear that. They're like, because I came out when I was 18. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to getting this pilot called Will and Grace, where I play a gay person. And then you'd think, well, what's the problem? Like, why aren't you a pioneer? Why aren't you a spokesperson for the gay community? Why aren't you out and proud? And it's like a 9-hour conversation. But what your brain goes through is, because first of all, I didn't have the DNA to be a spokesperson for any kind of group. I'm not that person. I wish I was. Being thrust in the spotlight when you weren't ready, I don't have the DNA for it. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know. I thought I had to still play the game, the Hollywood game from the 1950s, where you had to not comment on it, not deny it, but not accept, you know, not proclaim it either.
Right.
Because I thought maybe, you know, it could get me more parts. It was just stupid, young, naive way of thinking, not realizing, oh, I can do so much good for so many people if I just came out and started talking about it. And, you know, if you could turn back time, you know, then it would be great. But that's what was going through my head. So many, you know, you always feel the one person in the room that you feel like you have to forgive for being yourself, you know? Like, I remember I just went to my high school reunion last year.
Wow.
Last year. It was so fun. And I loved high school. I loved high school. I loved college. And everybody there, obviously, I'm out and I'm, you know, a known person to some in the world. And so everybody there knew. And all the guys were great. All the girls were great. And then I went over to see this old friend of mine. It was a table of guys. And they were awesome. Just the best. And there was one guy who didn't stand up. Because everybody else was standing and he wouldn't stand up. And I was like, oh, hey, nice to see you. And he looked away as I extended my hand. I've gotten a lot of that. And you immediately go through the process of, okay, I hate myself. Wait a minute. I hate him. No, I don't. He's uneducated. I'm okay. Like all the things you go through that goes through your head about forgiving yourself for who you are. It's like, it's like a 10-step process when you're confronted with something like that, you know?
Do you find yourself still feeling like you're in situations where you have to forgive yourself for being who you are?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I still struggle with it, but yeah, I always find myself having to adjust my personality to fit in a role that is expected of me, right? And so that's why I think I loved high school and college so much, is because when I left the house, I didn't have to pretend and I didn't have to play down kind of the real me. And so because, you know, back then, boy, I was on fire. I was like, girl, what are you doing, girl? You know, I was like crazy over the top, you know, which works great for the character of Jack on Will and Grace. But, and you know, as I've aged, I've come way down because it's too exhausting to be like that. But that's who I was. And so again, that goes back to always trying to take care of other people. It's embedded in me to want to take care of people, whether they like it or not, or whether they know it or not. And so I, again, goes back to me getting over the idea of what about self-care as opposed to other care and self, all this stuff, because it feels selfish to say, I need to take care of myself first. I need to do this first, because, you know, it's easier to put that, take care of other people.
Yeah. I mean, it's an easier distraction to just focus on another person's needs instead of your own. Yeah. I mean, that's a big burden to carry, the responsibility of having to protect not only your entire family, but anybody who would be come into contact with somebody who didn't agree with.
Right. And you know, I am exhausted taking care of you. It's a full time job. I mean, Chris doesn't know what it's like yet.
Has no idea.
No idea.
When you came out in 2013, you did something saying that you could come out too late, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain why you did that and why you felt the need to, I guess, apologize for even coming out too late?
Yeah, I will. You know, I think a friend of mine, Dax Shepard, do you know Dax Shepard? Mm-hmm. He's got a great podcast and he's such an incredible human being. So funny and so smart and so loving. He's just the best. We were at lunch one day and he goes, so let me ask you something. Why haven't you come out publicly? And I was like, why do I have to? Everybody in my life knows I'm gay. Like everybody in town knows, my friends, my family. I just didn't do it for the press. What's the big deal? And he goes, let me guess. You don't want to come out publicly because you think if you don't, then you can like open up some roles, will open up in movies and all these things that you've always dreamed of. And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And he goes, and how's that working out for you? And I thought that's when a huge, huge light bulb went off. Just that one phrase, and how is that working out for you? I was like, wow, it's not working out for me. And it never will, because that's just the world we live in where, you know, at the time, studios and networks and studio films, they just would never put a gay openly gay man and a gay leading big, huge studio movie. They just wouldn't. Maybe they will now, maybe they still won't. I don't know. But in that moment, I was like, I have to change my life. I have to get out from myself and make a stand, because I'm exhausted by the question from the press. I'm exhausted about dodging it, even though everybody knew. They just wanted me to say it. And I go, oh, well, there is so much power in just saying it. There's so much power in letting other people who are struggling with it know that it's okay. And I haven't been murdered, right? Nobody's after me. Sure, anybody can get hurt anywhere, any day, anytime, you know what I mean? For any reason. But I'm okay. I said it and I'm still standing and I'm still proud. And once you start making it, again, other people's problem and not yours, your life starts to change. So I'm going to stop taking care of other people's issues with being gay, and I'm going to let them stew about it and fight about it and lose out on it.
Mm-hmm. And so from there, you decided to have this, to be able to come out publicly and do all of that.
Yeah, I decided to come out. I did it. I worked with my publicist and I did it in The Advocate, I think I did. And The Advocate, which is a gay magazine. And then to your question, I felt I owed the gay community an apology, because I should have, or I wished, I shouldn't say I should have, I wished I knew better, and I wished I wasn't so afraid before. Mm-hmm. Because had I come out sooner, I could have helped more people and been in the position to. But it was, you know, so many reasons. I was scared, I was selfish, I was, you know, too inside of myself.
And this was all after you had done Will and Grace.
Yeah, this is, yeah, wow, yeah, way after.
Would there be anything that you would say to yourself as a starting Will and Grace man?
Yeah, before, yeah, for sure. I would just try to imbue the idea upon myself that there's nothing to be afraid of. And people are drawn to you more when you are your authentic self, right? So there's so much rewards in being true to who you are. And there's so much more life to live and enjoy and embrace when you aren't living in fear and you can be yourself.
Amen, honey.
Amen, sister.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. I love you. I'm so, so, so proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening, and thank you so much to Sean Hayes for spending some time with me and sharing his story. Next week, we're going to be hearing from Chris Williams, who lost his wife and two children after being struck by a drunk driver. We talk with him about how he was able to forgive and later form a friendship with the young man who caused the accident. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Katherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, also called The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This show is produced by Monique Laborde. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway.